Flash Up, your number one source for sports gaming and everything in between. I am your host, Jake Patterson, and we got a lot to talk about again this week because the national championship and by extension March Madness has come and gone. But also, like, the weather has significantly improved, so March Madness did its job distracting me while the weather absolutely sucked, despite it being spring. So, thank you, March Madness, for keeping me distracted while the weather was absolute dog shit, and now we have improved to actual spring temperatures. Freaking finally. But we have a new national champion, but then again, not really, because it's just UConn again. And saying that like they didn't absolutely deserve it, they won. I think this was the closest game of their entire tournament run, and they still won by 15. Let me just go back and double check their scores in the tournament. Oh, no, they beat Bama by 14, they beat Illinois by 23, they beat San Diego State by 30. They beat Northwestern by 17, and they beat Stetson by 39. So, their closest win in March was against St. John's at Madison Square Garden. That is the closest they have been the entire month of March. They beat Marquette by 7 and they beat St. John's by 5. Those are their only close wins since they lost at Creighton. That was their last loss. It was 2 months ago. Well, almost 2 months ago because it was at the end of February. But still, like, the calendar has flipped twice since their last loss, and they have absolutely dominated basically every game since. Like, I remember after that game, it's like, oh god, poor Nova, and that is exactly what happened. They won by 24. And just the whole way through to the end of the season, they have been absolutely dominant, particularly in March Madness. Like, none of these games are even close. 39-point win over Stetson, 17-point win over Northwestern, 30-point win over San Diego State, who I will remind you made the Final Four last year. I know it's a different team, but it's the same coach, and he's a good coach. Illinois by 25, Bama by 14, and Purdue by 15. Those are the two closest. Their Final Four game was their closest win against Alabama. That's how absolutely dominant this UConn team was. And it was very clear that, like, they were just better. Because Zach Edey dropped almost 40 points. And Purdue still got completely and utterly dominated. Like, it helps that it helped UConn's case that one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country only took one more shot total than UConn made from 3-point range. But the rebounds basically even. Offensive rebounds were a little bit more in UConn's favor. That's the big one. Assists. 18-8. Yeah, that's the big difference. 18-6 turnover ratio as opposed to 8-9. There's your difference. Because everything else, other than biggest lead, is more or less even. Like, UConn's biggest lead, or Purdue's biggest lead was 2. So they had the lead at multiple different points throughout the game. But they never pushed it past 2. And once the later once that game started getting into the final stretch, you could tell Purdue knew they were done. And also, like, can we talk about Cam Spencer? How he is the perfect player for Dan Hurley as a coach because they're both completely psychotic. Cam Spencer's a great player, but like, and Dan Hurley's a great coach, but they are both absolutely batshit insane. Like, they are both psycho. And it was amazing. And yeah, all in all, it was a pretty good national championship game. It made it easier that they, for some reason, still decided to tip off at 9:30 Eastern time. Can we please stop with this? Can we please stop with the 9:30 Eastern time tips for important games? And also, can we stop playing basketball in a football stadium? A college basketball court is less than a third the size of a regulation football field. A college basketball court is 94 feet from end to end. A football field, just the playing space, is 120 yards. That is more than triple. Like, stop playing basketball in football stadiums. Like, I know you play in NBA arenas in earlier rounds and you want the Final Four to feel big. Just play the Final Four in an NBA arena. It's not that big a deal. And they've been doing this forever. Like, one of the most famous commentator calls in Maryland sports history. I heard it a lot in high school because I watched this video a whole lot of times. And Dixon fires it up to the top of the Georgia Dome roof. That is Johnny Holiday's call at the end of the 2002 Maryland National Championship win. So that means we have been playing basketball in football stadiums for over 20 years. Because the Georgia Dome, last time I checked, was a football stadium. Right? Wasn't the Georgia Dome the Georgia Dome, wasn't it meant for football? Was a dome stadium? Who played there? The Peach Bowl, the Georgia State Panthers, the Celebration Bowl, the Falcons and the Hawks played there for 2 years. So, yeah. God, it's been 7 years since they demolished that thing. Good Lord. That is concerning. That it's been 7 years and it feels like that just happened. But that is another discussion entirely. But can we stop playing basketball in football stadiums, please? A regulation court is a third the size. Even an NBA court, which is longer, is still a third the size. There is no reason for that. And where's the Final Four next year? I keep thinking WrestleMania, because WrestleMania is in Minneapolis, but I think where is next year's Final Four? Because I want to say it's in San Antonio. I swear to God, if it's at the Alamo Dome. Wait, this is all this year. Yeah, this is all this year. Oh, no, here we go. Yeah, next year's Final Four. Where? It doesn't say where it's going to be, but I'm assuming it's going to be somewhere really dumb. Like, a venue that is far too big. Or it could just be at the Spurs home arena, which is a perfectly reasonable size for a venue to play basketball in. I know you want to sell more tickets because it's a big deal, but no, stop. It ruins the experience. Perfectly good seats for football are terrible for basketball. Like, just stop. Just stop with this, please. The games were good. It's just an absolutely cavernous football stadium. Stop playing basketball in them. It's weird because this is the same place the Fiesta Bowl was. And it gave me flashbacks to that. And that was pure torture. But all in all, congratulations to UConn. They're going to be pretty heavy favorites to win again next year because I'm sure they're just going to reload in the frickin' portal because now they've won a national championship 2 years in a row. And yeah, all in all, it was a very good tournament. One Shining Moment was really funny. This was really good this year. It actually focused on the gameplay instead of just replaying commentary clips, which was good. Iron Eagle did an incredible job filling in the absolutely massive shoes of Jim Nance. And like the banter with Raph was good, which is always important. Like, because Jim Nance had such good banter with Bill Raftery. Like, Iron Eagle stepping into those shoes was very important, and he executed it all flawlessly. So, shout out to him. And shout out to the NCAA for not fucking up this one thing. Even though the selection committee was really dumb with some of their choices, it led to a good tournament. So, all in all, good job, guys. Let's do it again next year. And speaking of next year, things are going to look really freaking weird next year. Because next year, Kentucky's going to have a new coach for the first time in 15 years. 16 years, because this was 15th. Kentucky's going to have a new coach for the first time in a very long time. Like, I was in middle school when John Calipari got that job. I was either in middle school or I was a freshman in high school, one or the other. Because 2008, 2009, that's like right on the line. And he is headed off to Arkansas, which, let's be honest, that's a downgrade for him. And honestly, it's a downgrade for Arkansas. Because I will die on this hill, Eric Musselman is a better coach than John Calipari. He is a better coach than John Calipari. Because I've been saying it for years. Calipari's not a good coach. He was a good recruiter, and he was good at cheating. But now, all the things he did to cheat are no longer cheating. Everyone can do it. And he has completely and utterly lost his edge. Which, again, freaking hilarious. Just absolutely amazing for one of the most unlikable coaches in the sport on the men's side. Because there are some shockingly unlikable coaches in women's college basketball. Kim Mulkey. Mostly her and Gino Auriemma. That's it. Those are the only two that actually bother me. It's just they're so unlikable. They're worse than most of the men's coaches I don't like. Like, Kim Mulkey is worse than Coach K. She's worse than John Shire. She's worse than Calipari, which is... If you've listened to... Like, you could go all the way back to freaking Average Joe's when I wasn't even the main host and I wasn't on every episode to hear my opinions about Calipari. I don't like him. And to say Kim Mulkey is worse than him should say everything it needs to about my opinion of Kim Mulkey. But it'll be interesting to see who Kentucky goes for, because I saw a lot of Kentucky fans on Twitter having the absolute delusion that they were gonna hire Dan Hurley. Why would he go there? Like, he turned a school, well, Jim Calhoun did, but Jim Calhoun doesn't like him. Because it was kind of a mess after the Kevin Ollie years. Like, UConn was kind of a mess during the Kevin Ollie years. They got one really lucky tournament run when they were a 7 seed. Thanks to, who was it? It was Shabazz Napier. Shabazz Napier just pulled a Kemba Walker, went off exclusively in March, and took 7 seed UConn to the final against 8 seed Kentucky, and they won. Like, that was just a wild year. But, like, last year, they were a 4 seed. They were a legitimate threat to at least make the Final Four, and then it's UConn. Once they get to the Final Four, you can't count them out. You can't count them out ever. I have learned my lesson. Especially under Dan Hurley, because he might be a better coach than Jim Calhoun was. He's psychotic, but he might be a better coach. And, like, why would he leave? Like, sure, Lexington's marginally nicer than stores. The weather's better. That much is for sure, because it's Connecticut. It's cold as balls for most of the school year, including pretty much all of basketball season. Like, there's nothing there. Stores, Connecticut is in the middle of freaking nowhere. Like, I've never even been there. But if you look on the map, Stores, Connecticut is in the middle of absolutely freaking nowhere. Because, much like where I live, it is sandwiched between... I don't even remember how to spell it, but... Damn it. Isn't it? Yeah, Stores, Connecticut. Where is this place on the map exactly? Because I'm pretty sure it is like exactly between... Yeah, that's what I thought. It is basically directly between New York and Boston. So, yeah, as someone who lives smack in the middle of two different major cities, you are absolutely in the middle of freaking nowhere. Like, I don't know how both the men's and the women's teams turned into absolute powerhouses at exactly the same time. I do not understand that, but hey, who am I to question? Who am I to question coaches I don't really like? Because I'm not a huge fan of Jim Calhoun either. Who am I to question two coaches who both drive me absolutely freaking insane every time they were or are in a press conference? But then again, Gino Auriemma's dropped so much lower on my hate list now that Kim Mulkey has come to the forefront in women's basketball in terms of really unlikable coaches. And speaking of women's basketball figures being unlikable, why are, like, current and former WNBA players hating on Caitlin Clark so much? Are they jealous that they brought more eyeballs to the game than she ever has? Like, that has to be it, because NBA players don't act this way. They never have. Like, Jordan didn't really act this way with Kobe. Kobe didn't act this way with LeBron. LeBron didn't act this way with any of the guys that have come after him. LeBron's always super complimentary of the younger guys that are coming up behind him. Like, when a younger guy has game, LeBron will call it out on Twitter. Like, unlike a lot of NBA people, LeBron actually does still follow college basketball to some level. For a guy who never played it, which is interesting. Because guys like Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith And all these other guys who get just forced to do March Madness every year, despite not giving a crap about college basketball, who did actually play college basketball. And LeBron, the one guy basically currently in the NBA that didn't. The one prominent guy in the NBA, anyway, that didn't play any college ball is the one who is the biggest fan of college ball. So I do not understand this at all. Is it jealousy that she's accomplished things that you couldn't? Like, Lynette Woodard is like, oh yeah, I didn't have a three-point line and I had to shoot with a men's ball and no one gave a shit about my record for 40 years. So Caitlin Clark didn't actually break my record. It's like, well, then no record would ever be broken ever because every era of a sport is different. Like, Lou Gehrig set the consecutive games record in the 20s. It held for 70 years. Baseball was a lot different in 1995 than it was in 1920, whenever it was he set that record. Set the 2130 streak. I mean, obviously, considering 2131 took like 12 years. I'm guessing it's about the a similar amount of time. But like, watch the footage of Lou Gehrig's retirement. Baseball looks a lot. Watch the footage of Lou Gehrig's retirement, because that was, he retired in the middle of the season because his ALS was getting worse. And compare that to the footage of Cal Ripken Jr. breaking the record. Like, the footage of Cal Ripken Jr. breaking the record is still like grainy as fuck by modern standards, because it's, you know, like 480p at best. But it's still in color and has reasonably high fidelity audio. And the colors aren't awful. They're not good. The orange looks a little bit closer to red, but you know, it's in color. You can make out people's faces instead of them just kind of looking like a gray blur. Like, the sport changes. So no, Lynette, she broke your record. And all the people at that press conference, like, doing the snaps and applauding her for acting like a jealous bitch. I do not understand this logic at all. Like, I do not understand the logic of hating on someone who has massively improved the public visibility of your sport. Like, that entire recruiting class. Because Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, Cameron Brink, Angel Reese, and I'm pretty sure Haley Van Lith were all in that same recruiting class. Those five women have completely changed women's college basketball forever. Like, everyone was like, oh, Elena Deladon and, crap, I forgot, Skylar Diggins. I was like, how did I forget her name already? She was actually one of the good players in that little mini boost we had about, God, 10 years ago. That hurt to say out loud. But, like, Elena Deladon played at Delaware. By her own choice, but she played at Delaware. Skylar Diggins was at Notre Dame. You had Brittany Griner, but, like, once she went to the WNBA, no one cared. I hope the same thing doesn't happen for Caitlin Clark, just so she can prove all these frickin' haters wrong. And, like, other legends of the women's game, like Diana Taurasi. Why is Diana Taurasi hating on her? You should be celebrating her. Like, more people will look back at your achievements because of her. But now when people think of Lynette Woodard, who is, again, the second highest scoring woman in the history of women's college basketball, a record she held for almost 40 years, they're just going to think of her being a jealous bitch at some conference. I do not understand this logic at all. Like, maybe it's because I'm a guy and I just do not understand how women's brains work, but, like, I am struggling to understand this logic of just being so mean to Caitlin Clark when, because of her, tens of million, almost 20 million people watched her Elite Eight, Final Four, and National Championship game. Almost 10 million people watched the Elite Eight game against LSU, the Final Four game against, I don't even remember who they played. Who did they play in the Final Four? They played UConn. The Final Four game against UConn, and even more watched the National Championship game against South Carolina. Like, I don't understand this logic. I'm sorry. I just don't. And also, shout out to Dawn Staley for being an awesome coach and an awesome person. Just, like, she won and she still gave Caitlin Clark her flowers after the win. And the two of them clearly have, like, massive amounts of respect for each other. So, like, all in all, both great people. I hope their careers continue to be super successful. Like, I hope Caitlin Clark actually has a successful career in the WNBA that brings eyeballs and money to the WNBA. It'll never pass the NBA, like, ever. That's just not going to happen. That is a pipe dream. But it could at least get a little bit closer. But that's what I got for college basketball for the season. Up next, we're going to switch gears over to Call of Duty League. Major 3 qualifiers are here. And we got some map pool changes, thank God. That's coming up next here on The Mashup. Hey, do you really like The Mashup and want to help support it even more?
Of course I do. You're so awesome.
Well, do I have good news for you. I now have a Barstool Sports Store affiliate link.
Oh, what the heck is that?
An affiliate link is a link that takes you directly to the Barstool store, but has some extra coding in it to let them know that I sent you, so I get some of the money from the sale in return.
That's so cool!
Yes, it is, and it helps me put out better and better content for you. And maybe does enough to get Barstool's attention that they'll give me a job. All you have to do is go to barstool-sports.pxf.io/themashup. That's barstoolsports.pxf.io. .pxf.io/themashup and get some merch. Doesn't matter what you get, you'll be supporting me and the mashup. And you get a cool t-shirt, hoodie, flag, or whatever else you want in return. So go to barstoolsports.pxf.io/themashup today and help me grow this podcast even more. All right, let's talk some COD League. How about that? It is week one of the Toronto Major Qualifiers, which will take place the weekend before Memorial Day. God, that's weird. That's weird to think about. That Memorial Day is that close. I don't know how I feel about that. Because, like, that's Memorial Day right there. You can't see where I'm pointing my mouse, but the 27th is Memorial Day. This tournament's going to end on the 19th. That, oh God, I don't like that. I don't like that it's almost Memorial Day. I mean, Memorial Day is a great weekend because, you know, double or nothing. And we'll dive back into the roots of this show and talk some wrestling later. But yeah, Memorial Day is one of my favorite weekends of the year because double or nothing usually ends up being one of the best shows of the year. But yeah, nothing crazy this week in terms of match quality, and online COD just doesn't really do it for me. Like, you don't get the same levels of shit talk, you don't get the same anything really. But yeah, there's not a lot here. Like, LAG get back-to-back games, one of them against a team that is much better than them. Like, they have the second game on Friday, and then the first game on Saturday. And that first game on Saturday is against Toronto. They're going to get their shit rocked. Like, they're going to get stomped into the ground. Like, LAG aren't going to be good for the rest of this year. They're not. Like, they're going to be able to play spoiler for teams at majors, and that's it. Like, they're not pulling a Vanguard Major 2 at any point this year. Because that was much like UMBC beating Virginia. That was a perfect storm of wild things happening. And Slashers, like, Slashers, like, black magic in the loser's bracket. That I don't get. I don't get where he got that from, but he sure channeled it that weekend. He didn't channel it with Thieves, though, he did channel it with Thieves. That's where it mostly became famous, but he didn't channel it in the CDL with Thieves. But yeah, Boston versus Miami should be interesting because they both have new rosters. We still don't know what Rocker's roster is. It's Tuesday. They have a game on Saturday. Actually, no. They have a game on Friday. They're the first game of the week. They have not a whole lot of time. Like, as I'm recording this, it's almost 6 o'clock on Tuesday. Little insider knowledge. They're the first game of the afternoon on Friday. They're the first game of the major qualifiers. We still don't know who their roster is. Because for a while it was going to be Illy and Dak. Now Illy is out. Standy might still be in, which is hilarious because, you know, you couldn't live with your failure line. And where did it bring you back to me? You know, the guy primarily responsible for the Rocker Resurrection. Rocker Resurrection. Yeah, we still don't know what their roster is. They haven't announced it. I don't even think they've tweeted in like a month, which is unlike them. Fucking G2. Yeah, see you at Major 2. The last time they tweeted was March 22nd. They haven't tweeted in almost 3 weeks. March 22nd. Actually, that is 3 weeks. Like, on Friday, that'll be 3 weeks. They better announce their frickin' roster. Because, you know, you guys kind of have to play Friday afternoon. So you better get on that. But hey, at least we get Optic versus FaZe to end the week this week. That should be pretty decent. These other games, they are not doing it for me. Like, Seattle versus Carolina, that's two terrible teams. Boston versus Miami, that's two, like, average teams. NYSL are going to destroy Rocker, so are FaZe. And I'll laugh if Rocker get the win in either of those games, because it would be funny. Miami versus Toronto. Miami versus Thieves might be okay. Oh, wait, that's next week. Those are all next week games. No, the last... I was like, wait, these games are actually good. And I'm like, no, I was looking at next week. Next week's games are okay. But this week, God, that is just not doing it for me. Like, at all. But hey, it'll be interesting to see because we've got a lot of new rosters and we've got a new map pool. Seattle has just recently officially announced that they're dropping Illy and replacing him with 04. So that's good for them. Illy confuses me. Like, I just watched it. I believe it was either Breaking Point or COD Archive. I don't remember who had the actual video, but they had like the champion who disappeared as a video, and it was really interesting because, like, what happened to this guy? He went nuts during 2020, which again was all online. So, you know, but he was good in Cold War, which was primarily online, and his land performance during Cold War left a lot to be desired. And then the whole thumb thing during Vanguard. And then he was still playing on a on a Smurf, or like allegedly still playing on a Smurf against the advice of his doctor. And that fucked up his thumb even worse. Like, I don't know what the deal with this guy is. Because he came up with Simp and Celium. Like, Simp's actually good. Celium snakes his dick off all the time, so I'm less willing to give him props for being good. But Simp is actually good. But we got new maps. Vista and Six Star are replacing Invasion and Skid Row. Thank God for Hardpoint. They're just replacing them for Hardpoint. Six Star is actually replacing Terminal for Search. Which I'm glad, because I like playing on Skid Row, but it's a weird Hardpoint map. Like, you have to start rotating to try to get the spawns for P2. Like, 20 seconds into P1. Like, you cannot hold P1 for more than 20 to 25 seconds. Because you have to immediately start setting up for the rotation to 2. Like, you basically have to put one person on 1 and then start trying to get 2. And that one guy on 1 is just trying to get whatever time they can. So I'm glad that's gone. And Invasion just sucks. Invasion's just the worst map in the game. It's too big. Some of the walls are just... God, those walls. The spawns are terrible. Like, I'm so glad that map is gone. That map sucks. I hate watching it. I hate playing it. Just get it out. Give me some actual good maps. And Six Star Search, and Six Star is also replacing Terminal in Search, which, again, good. Terminal Search is just weird, which is, again, weird to think about, because Search is the only mode that existed when these maps were made. Like, Hardpoint and Control weren't a thing. And they certainly weren't in competitive play. Well, didn't really have competitive play until, official competitive play until Black Ops 2. Like, truly official competitive play where everyone really started making names for themselves was, like, Black Ops 2. But I'm glad we're getting rid of Terminal Search, because Terminal Search is not very good. So I'm glad that's gone. Like, thank God. Yeah, improvements to the map pool, finally, with some maps that are actually decent. I'm shocked Infinity Ward made maps that are actually decent, because they have lost all of their touch when it comes to making COD maps. But yeah, I'm more looking forward to the Major itself, because, you know what, like, as much as I went on a rant about how much I hate it, I am kind of a sucker for drama between people I across the board don't like. Like, I don't like any of the people involved in that drama. So any outcome is funny. Because all four of them have gargantuan egos, so they're not just going to squash this like adults. And I want to see it happen in person. I don't care about seeing it on Twitter. I want to see whatever happens with this happen in person. Because it's going to be stupid, no matter what. Like, looking ahead, about a month from now, I wouldn't be surprised if Scrap and Draza straight up got into a fist fight at this Major. Like, would not be surprised at all. Because they're going to keep shit-talking each other on Twitter the entire stage. And then they're actually going to be together at the same event. And Scrap's going to be emboldened by the fact that it's his event. This is coming to blows. I'm putting that out there now. There's a very real chance this comes to blows. Probably not on stage. Probably in the back. Just putting that prediction out there. I know it's insane, but if fists are going to fly at any major on this calendar, including champs, it's this one. Like it or not, it's this one. The league will be embarrassed, and rightly so, for allowing this to continue without even trying to intervene. But yeah, that's my big prediction for all of stage three is that Scrap and Draza finally just get into a fist fight. Like they put down the Twitter fingers and finally actually get into a fist fight. Because that would be hilarious. Mostly because Scrap would get his ass kicked. Because I think Draza has about 4 inches and 30 pounds on him. So, it would be really funny. As much as I hate both of them, it would be funny to watch Scrap get his ass kicked. This sounds terrible, but like, the only interesting thing about the CDL this year has been the drama. Truly, like, that has been the gameplay has not been that interesting. The maps are shit. There's only like 3 good teams in a league of 12. Everyone's just waiting for franchising to die. And we get a Treyarch game next year, which will hopefully have better maps and, you know, better everything. And finally get rid of this gunsmith shit. And yeah, shout out to Dashy for saying what all of us have been thinking for the last 5 years, that gunsmith has just completely ruined COD. Like, it was a cool gimmick at MW19, and then, like, this year it's just been awful. The last 2 years, it's been terrible. It wasn't good at Vanguard either, because that was just Anachronism Simulator. It's like, oh yeah, red dot sights in 1945. Yes, those definitely existed. Hell, there were anachronisms in Cold War. Because, like, red dots didn't really exist in the early 80s either. Like, red dots are a relatively recent invention. So yeah, I 100% agree with Dashy. Never thought I'd say that, but he said what we were all thinking. Gunsmith sucks. Please bring back pick 10, Treyarch, for the love of God. Like, please bring back pick 10 in Gulf War. It would make so much sense for a game set in the early 90s. Just please. Also, never had a COD game set in the early 90s. I'm looking forward to that. Because early 90s aesthetic is unmatched, and I know Treyarch will just go balls to the wall with it, so looking forward to that. But God, I am fully falling into the COD cycle, aren't I? It's April. That's to be expected, but that's what I got for COD League. Up next, switch gears, we're gonna talk some wrestling, because I want to, and there was a lot of good wrestling this past weekend, so we're gonna talk about that up next here on the Mash. All right, let's go back to our roots a little bit and talk some wrestling. It has been a very long time since I've talked about wrestling on this show, and the last time I did, I don't think it was all that positive. But this time, I do have positive things to say about the wrestling business, which is nice. And yeah, just fully leaning into this show's original theme, like, and its name, truly a mashup. I did one traditional sport, one esport, and now I'm talking about wrestling. Like, truly leaning into this show's theme. Look at me doing brand synergy. This is not at all what brand synergy is, but it sounded cool. So yeah, Mania weekend. I will admit, I did not actually watch Mania, because I hate the Peacock setup for watching WWE pay-per-views, I hate that Mania is split into two nights. I preferred to watch the Final Four. Unfortunately, like, that wouldn't have been that big a deal because Saturday wasn't all that good. By account of basically everyone who watched it, Saturday was not that good. But I also did watch Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor on Saturday because I didn't watch that on Friday. And, you know, two wrestling pay-per-views totaling like 11 hours. Actually, no, they're not that long. They're not that long anymore because they split into two nights. But two wrestling pay-per-views probably totaling about 9 hours of content. That's a lot to watch in one day. And then to watch another four and a half, 5 hours the next day. That's a lot. But yeah, WWE did a good thing. I didn't even watch it, and you could tell this had the Triple H fingerprints all over it. Like, the NXT show on Friday night was really good. Biggest crowd in, I think, the history of NXT. So props to them. Like, NXT is what truly developed my wrestling fandom. Because, like, I was mostly, like, joke watching Raw and SmackDown. Started to get into the stories a little bit. And then I discovered NXT and I was like, whoa. And then from there, like, New Japan and Ring of Honor. And that led to All Elite. And the rest is wrestling history. But Sunday was the big one, mostly the main event, where Cody Rhodes did in fact finally finish the story. And it wasn't Endgame. It was Star Wars. And Cody is a bigger Star Wars guy. This should have been in front of our noses the entire time. Literally last year was Empire Strikes Back. Everything went wrong for Cody. Last year was Empire Strikes Back. A New Hope was his debut at Mania 2 years ago. Coming out and calling out Seth Rollins because Seth was a dick in 2022. I am surprised how much I know about the WWE product over the last 2.5 years, given I've watched like 2 episodes of Raw and only Raw in that entire time and have not watched a single pay-per-view. Actually, I think I did watch a Rumble. But, like, that's it. Like, I've watched a Rumble and 2 episodes of Raw. Nothing else. So, yeah. But Cody returning in 2022, that was A New Hope. Last year was Empire Strikes Back. This year was Return of the Jedi. How did we not see it? That Cody, the big Star Wars guy, like, not the comic book guy. There's plenty of comic book guys in wrestling. Cody Rhodes, not necessarily one of them. He's a Star Wars guy. I think he also does like Street Fighter, but that's also much more Kenny's thing. Kenny and Xavier Woods are like the big Street Fighter guys, and they have an awesome rivalry that will probably never play out in ring unless AEW and WWE do a Forbidden Door show together, which I am crossing my fingers and waiting for. Because I'm done with the tribalism bullshit. I just want wrestling to be good. Like, I'm happy Mania was good this weekend, even if I didn't watch it. And, like, it got me to watch Raw on Monday night. And I'm still going to watch Dynamite on Wednesday. And I'm going to watch Collision on Saturday. And I might even watch SmackDown and Rampage and do a little double feature on Friday. Who knows? And hell, I have Honor Club. I might watch Ring of Honor on Thursday night. Why not? Supercard of Honor was an awesome show. Why not watch the Fallout episode? They're going to tape it right after Dynamite on Wednesday. And yeah, speaking of Supercard of Honor, like the big Mania weekend show I actually watched, I had zero levels of hype for this show, even given that it was a good card, like Athena versus Hikaru Shida, Billy Starks versus Queen Aminata for the newly created Ring of Honor Women's TV title. Dalton Castle in an unsanctioned match, which was very funny. It wasn't like highbrow wrestling by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're watching a Dalton Castle match for highbrow wrestling, you're watching the wrong match. I'm sorry, but you are. Like, they've switched his billing to where he's actually from, which is Rochester. But when I first started watching Dalton Castle matches, he was billed as being from Catalina Island. Like, 200 people live there full time. Like, it was from Catalina Island, Dalton Castle. Like, if you're watching that man for highbrow wrestling, what are you doing? Just watch like a Cody match. Just watch a Cody Rhodes match. Then you will get highbrow wrestling. Heck, watch it. Like, you don't even have to go to WWE. Just watch a Cody Rhodes Ring of Honor match and you'll get highbrow wrestling. But it was all in all a very good show. But I think like three matches truly stand out to me. And two of them were women's matches. Like, Tony Khan, say what you will about Tony Khan, at least on the Ring of Honor side of things, that man knows how to book a good women's division. Like, he's doing a genuinely good job with the Ring of Honor women's division. I normally hate dominant champions. I normally hate dominant champions because a lot of times, dominant champions, this is mostly corruption from years of Vince McMahon, but usually dominant champions are done to hide the fact that their movesets are boring as fuck. Shayna Baszler, boring champion. Honestly, Brock Lesnar, boring champion. The one time AEW's gotten it wrong, Jade Cargill, boring champion. Like, say what you will about how Tony's handled the AEW women's division. See previously mentioned example of Jade Cargill. Like, there is no reason that woman, who still cannot wrestle worth a shit, should have been the inaugural TBS champion and held the title for almost 2 years. There's zero reason for that. But she's in WWE now. I'm not going to complain about her as much because I still don't think I'm going to fully recommit to WWE yet, because they're still doing Saudi Arabia shows. They're still trying to act like the Vince McMahon thing was not a big deal. Like, in press and stuff, and they still have CM Punk. And I really don't like CM Punk. Like, he's a good wrestler, but God, he's annoying. And, like, dude, clearly you're the problem. Like, clearly you're the problem. So many different people hate working with you. What's the common denominator? It's not them. It's you. Anyway, back to Supercard. Incredible show, top to bottom. Like, the tag match between Undisputed Kingdom and the Infantry was also really good. It just got, you know, completely outshined by Billy Starks and Queen Amanada, Sheeta and Athena, and Eddie Kingston versus Mark Briscoe. All of them for three different reasons. Like, Sheeta and Athena was the most, like, straightforward, good wrestling match. And it's the first truly legitimate challenge Athena has had in a long time. Which, again, is impressive because she's been champion for over 400 days. Like, the story of that match was, oh, Sheeta is Athena's first real challenge in a very long time. It's like, okay, she has to step her game up. And she did. She, like, that was the most straightforward match. The Billy Starks Queen Amanada match was more an angle, but it was a perfectly executed angle. The match was just long enough to fool you into thinking, okay, this is just going to be a normal women's wrestling match between two women with very different styles who are both very good at what they do. And then Billy went for a front flip dive, and Amanada got her knees up. And which is a move wrestlers do all the time. And Billy landed kind of awkwardly. But she did it on purpose. Because she went to grab her neck and started screaming in pain. And you could hear a pin drop in the Leocora Center. Not a small venue, by the way. It's not Wells Fargo Center size, but it's big. You could hear a pin drop in that room. And this is Philly. This is a... And, like, this is a crowded a Ring of Honor show in Philadelphia. These people are smarky as hell. Smarky and cynical. And you could hear a pin drop in that arena. And, of course, they do all the doctor, couple referees, they all come in. They're checking her. They're keeping Aminato away. And Ian Riccaboni and Caprice are like... Oh, and I think Nigel, too, is like, oh, she's moving her fingers and cut back to the announce desk. It's like, oh, your career could end just like that. Let's hope that's not the case. They put a neck brace on her. And this is where a lot of people caught on. Because procedure with neck injuries is not to have the person walk out. It is to put them on a stretcher and carry them out. But everyone was so worried about Billy. The majority of people were so worried about Billy... They wouldn't even think of that. And Aminata goes to open the ropes for her so she can get out easier. And then it happens. Billy grabs her by the waist, rolls her up into a pin. 1, 2, 3. Billy Starks is your first ever Ring of Honor women's television champion. Which, props to her. That girl is 19. She's going to be a megastar. And just like the Joker, she perfected that psycho Harley Quinn smile. And the David Bowie face paint getting like all smeared over the course of the match to give her more of a Harley Quinn look. Probably not intentional, but it definitely helped sell the image of her standing on the ropes, holding the belt in one hand and the neck brace she didn't need in the other. And fully turning heel. She's going to be a megastar because she got a Philadelphia Ring of Honor crowd to bite on a fake injury that she used to pin her opponent. And I don't think anyone else in the company could have pulled that off. In AEW or Ring of Honor, man or woman, I don't think anyone else could have pulled that off. No one is sympathetic enough to pull that off. Like, no one could pull that off. Like, Sammy couldn't do that. I'm trying to think of the big faces in AEW. Most of them are kind of anti-heroes. Like, Hangman definitely couldn't pull that off. Kenny... Will Ospreay couldn't do that. Will Ospreay is one of the most popular wrestlers in the company right now. People would not buy that if he tried it. Britt couldn't pull that off. Sheeta couldn't pull that off. Like, none of the men or women could pull that move off. And everyone involved, Billy Starks, Queen Aminata, the refs, I believe it was Doc Samson, Ian, Caprice, and Nigel. Like, everyone worked that angle, to absolute perfection. Like, people are going to be talking about that finish for years. There were other good matches on the show that I only watched 3 days ago. That is still the main thing I remember. It's that, Athena's entrance... And Mark Briscoe's win. And shout out to Athena for the Karlach cosplay. That was freaking awesome. And it worked because there's probably a lot of wrestling fans that don't know that Karlach is a freaking cinnamon roll. Like, is one of the nicest characters in all of fiction. Like, Karlach is a goofball. She's jacked, and she's kind of scary looking, but she's a freaking goofball. And it was convincing because I bet a lot of people who were watching Ring of Honor don't know that. And she is also Athena's favorite character, which, again, shout out to Athena. She's been one of my favorite wrestlers basically since I started watching wrestling. Like, Seth Rollins was probably one of my original favorites. It was like Seth, Dean Ambrose at the time, now Jon Moxley, the Usos, and Athena. Like, she is among my original five favorite wrestlers. And she's still one of my favorites. Like, when she debuted in AEW, I went crazy. I was so happy to see her. Because, oh, shocking. A wrestler who is athletic, uses a very flashy offense that still looks like it hurts, and is completely unashamed of being a giant nerd. Shocker that they're one of my favorites, right? But she had an awesome match with Sheeta. I would be totally fine with her being Ring of Honor Women's Champion for a full 2 years. She's a bit of a ways off. Like, she's only just a hair over a year. She's about a month and a half over a year right now. So she's got a long way to go before she's champion for 2 years. But I would be fully okay with it. Because really, right before you do it, you could start the Billy redemption arc. You could start to, like, let Billy Starks have a heel run for the rest of the year. She finally realizes the error of her ways and turns on Athena at Final Battle. And then, boom. And then, boom. You just start the build for next year's Supercard, and they go at it at Supercard next year, and Billy wins. There you go. Obviously, there'd be a lot more to it than this, but I just fantasy booked the next year of the Ring of Honor women's title. Do whatever you want in between. Just have that happen. Like, one of them turns on the other at Final Battle this year. Now, you'd have to have Athena turn on Billy. Or Billy turn on Athena and make it clear she is turning face. And then have like the Billy redemption arc. Have her turn back at Final Battle this year. So she gets what, 8 months to be a heel? Turn her back at Final Battle and then just start the build for next year's Supercard and just go from there. Like, just, you would make so much money, Tony Khan. You would make so much money. And the night ended with another emotional championship match for a different reason than Cody's win over Roman was Mark Briscoe's win over Eddie Kingston for the Ring of Honor world title, which, and Eddie and the Briscoes are friends. So that makes it carry like a lot more weight. And it's been just over a year since Jay's death. It was 11 years to the day of his first Ring of Honor world title win, which Mark has never won. Jay's always been the one who would branch out into singles and actually win titles. So seeing Mark do it, and his kids, Jay's kids, his wife, his parents, all of the, like, the entire Briscoe family, because they're from Delaware. Philly's a short trip for them. like Sandy Fork's like dead center. It's not dead center. It's in lower slower. But that'd be like a 3 hour drive. That's nothing. For the Briscoe family, that's nothing. So they all make the trip up there. And you see like all the other like longtime Ring of Honor guys, like Christopher Daniels, Dalton Castle. Weirdly, David and Bennett coming out just being themselves, not being their characters, obviously. Like, didn't look like Castle was in character either, if we're being honest. and all of them celebrating together and picking him up at the end. Just like beautiful imagery, the streamers, just like classic piece of Ring of Honor is throwing streamers in the ring when someone wins a title. Like just an absolutely beautiful wrestling moment that I'm glad I decided to watch. Because I was disappointed in Final Battle last year. I genuinely was. And this has completely reflipped my opinion back on Ring of Honor. It's like, oh, this is actually good stuff. Like, it's very different than AEW in its presentation and its roster. But this is genuinely good stuff. But that's all I got for this week. Hope you all enjoyed. Hope you all enjoy the rest of your week. And I will talk to you guys next time. Until then, peace.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
Reach for the sky, boy.